Now, if your Bibles and turn to the 17th chapter of John, we'll begin there in a moment. I want to study a little bit with you this evening about our striving for unity, and I think it's pretty easy how to define unity. We see that used a lot. But if we look at Webster's definition, we see that there's a quality or a state of not being multiple, a condition of harmony, a totality of related parts, a group that's not divided, basically. In Psalms 133, verse 1, we read, "Behold how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity." So let's begin here in John, the 17th chapter. In verse 13, Jesus is praying. And then when we start in verse 13 here, this is a prayer mainly about the apostles, specifically about the apostles and Him asking God to keep with them. But as we get to verse 20, it shifts a little bit. We'll begin in verse 13. "But now I come to you, and these things I speak in the world, that they may have my joy fulfilled in themselves. I have given them your word, and the world has hated them, because they are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. I do not pray that you should take them out of the world, but that you should keep them from the evil one. They are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. Sanctify them by your truth. Your word is truth. As you sent me into the world, I also have sent them into the world. And for their sakes, I sanctify myself, that they also may be sanctified by the truth. I do not pray for these alone, but also for those who will believe in me through their word, that they all may be one, as you, Father, are in me and I in you, that they may also be one in us, that the world may believe that you sent me. And the glory which you gave me, I have given them, that they may be one just as we are one, I in them, and you in me, that they may be made perfect in one, and that the world may know that you have sent me, and I have loved them as you have loved me." Talking about being one, praying for our unity here, Jesus prays, and I think that's something that we would do well to pray in as well. Turn to Philippians, the first chapter. In verse 21, Philippians chapter 1. It states, "Only let your conduct be worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or am absent, I may hear of your affairs, that you stand fast in one spirit, with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel." Continue in chapter 2, verses 3 through 5, "Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look out not only for his own interest, but also for the interest of others. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Jesus Christ." Hopefully we're beginning to see a theme here that that sees that we have to do something about this. Our interest cannot be our own. In Ephesians, the fourth chapter, we'll spend some more time this evening. Several verses in Ephesians chapter 4. Beginning of it, obviously talking about unity. Verse 1, "I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you to walk worthy of the calling with which you were called, with all lowliness and gentleness, with long-suffering, bearing with one another in love, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace." So Paul exhorts the Christians in Ephesus to walk worthy of the calling But then he tells them to endeavor. And we should understand that word, endeavor. If we endeavor to do something, do we sit around and wait for something to happen? If we endeavor to do something, we actually have to do something about that. We have to try. We have to put some effort into it. And so unity doesn't just happen. We have to work through that. And we have to understand that unity is worth having. And it is, because Jesus specifically told us that it is. So, we can ask, how do we achieve this unity? What are some of the ways that we can do that? And there's obviously one way that we can do that, and that is through compromise. Right? It's pretty easy to get along with everybody if we just compromise. If we compromise everything, though, what have we gotten? We can't compromise the truth. So if we continue in Ephesians the 14th chapter, or in the 4th chapter, verse 14, we read that we should no longer be children tossed to and fro, carried about with every wind of doctrine by the trickery of men and the cunning craftiness of deceitful plotting, but speaking the truth in love, may grow up in all things unto Him who is the head, Christ, from whom the whole body joined and knit together by what every joint supplies, according to the effective working by which every part does its share, causes growth of the body for the edifying of itself in love. Verse 14, we can't be tossed to and fro, because that's what happens if we just compromise with everybody, with every thought. We have to understand the truth, and we've got to apply that. And so, compromise is not the only way, because compromise can ultimately bring about division. So we have to know the truth, and we have to guard that truth. In Proverbs chapter 4, in verse 4, we read, "Let your heart retain my words." Verse 13 says, "Take firm hold of instruction, do not let go." In chapter 7, verse 1, "My son, keep my words and treasure my commands within you." And in chapter 10, verse 17, "He who keeps instruction is in the way of life, but he who refuses correction goes astray." This instruction, this word that we're to keep close to us, Jesus Himself also discusses in John the 8th chapter. In 31, it says, "If you abide in my word, you are my disciples indeed." Many of us know John 8:32, but 8:31 is important whenever we talk about unity and abiding in the Word, because we have to keep that truth near to us. 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 21 tells us to test all things and hold fast to what is good. We need to keep His words in our heart. But to do that, we have to know what His words are. So, in a way, as we strive for unity, we have to understand what the truth is so that we can continue in it. If we're true disciples, we'll be abiding in His Word and walking in the way of life, and we will be able to find unity. But there's some other points that are going to have to help us achieve unity. If we go back to Ephesians, the 4th chapter, if you're still there, in verse 16, there's some key points in there. "From whom the whole body joined and knit together by what every joint supplies, according to the effective working by which every part does its share, causes growth of the body for the edifying of itself in love." See, it's important that each part of the body does its own work. We think back to the 1 Corinthians chapter 12 and the discussion of the body there. Everybody has a separate part, but they all come together to make a body. And so here, we're encouraged to all work together and to do our part. You know, it also ends with edifying itself in love. And for most of the rest of this evening, I want to talk about that phrase. But, you know, that's one of the things that I think that can be very difficult. Because sometimes it's easy to love our brothers. But what happens when it's not? So, is that their fault or is that our fault? Are we being selfish? Or are we being selfless? So, let's turn to John 13 quickly. And in verse 34, Jesus says, "A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another as I have loved you, that you also love one another." So how are we supposed to love one another? As Jesus loved us. So where do we draw the line at giving that love to each other? We read on in verse 35, "By this will all know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." If the world should be able to look at us and see our love for one another, and know just from that we are His disciples, then our love for each other must be something that stands out. It must be something that's easy to see. It must be obvious. I think that's very important. How are others going to be able to know us and that we are different? They have to see this love. 1 Corinthians, the 8th chapter. 1 Corinthians chapter 8. Paul discusses an important topic here, beginning in verse 7 and going through the end of the chapter. "However, there is not in everyone that knowledge, for some, with consciousness of the idol, until now, eat it as a thing offered to an idol, and in their conscience, being weak, is defiled. The food does not commend us to God, for neither, if we eat, are we the better, nor, if we do not eat, are we the worse. But beware, lest somehow this liberty of yours becomes a stumbling block to those who are weak. For if anyone sees you who have knowledge eating in an idol's temple, will not the conscience of him who is weak be emboldened to eat those things offered to idols? And because of your knowledge shall the weak brother perish, for whom Christ died. But when you thus sin against the brethren and wound their weak conscience, you sin against Christ. Therefore, if food makes my brother stumble, I will never again eat meat, lest I make my brother stumble." Back in the 6th chapter, as we consider that attitude of self-sacrifice that Paul has, in the 6th chapter, mainly in verse 7, but let's begin in verse 6, "But brother goes to law against brother, and that before unbelievers. Now therefore, it is already an utter failure for you that you go to law against one another. Why do you not rather accept wrong? Why do you not rather let yourselves be cheated?" Discussion here is the brethren bring lawsuits against each other. And so we have two ends of the spectrum here concerning attitude. Right? One is, I will do things that I may not myself think are wrong in order to make sure that I don't bother somebody else's conscience. And then the other side there is, you have done something against me and I'm going to get you back. You owe me, therefore I, even rightly so, can take you to a court of law and prove that you owe me. So we have to be very careful as to not offend our brother, but we also can't allow ourselves to be easily offended. We have to ask questions. What are we willing to endure from each other? Are we willing to endure being wronged by one another? Can we do better at accepting being wronged in order to maintain unity in the body? The 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians, long chapter on love. I'm going to read the first 7 verses. Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I have become sounding brass or clanging cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith, so that I could remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, but have not love, it profits me nothing. Love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself, is not puffed up, does not behave rudely, does not seek its own, is not provoked, thinks no evil, does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. Bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. See, we can do everything right. According to the first 3 verses here, but if we have love, if we don't have love, then it doesn't matter. So some of the things that love is, as we consider how we should act in loving each other for unity. Love is patient. So are we patient with each other? It is kind. Do we seize those opportunities to be kind to each other? It's not jealous. Are we? It does not brag and is not arrogant. So are we about making ourselves look good? Or are we about the other person? Are we about our brother? It does not act unbecomingly. Do we carefully consider our actions and the effects that it may have on others? It does not seek its own. You know, this one is difficult today because, you know, you can read and see things about the me generation. You can see that it's all about me. It's all about what I want. It's all about how I can get ahead. But love doesn't seek its own. So are we separating ourselves from that idea? That's going to be difficult. More for the younger group than it is for those of us who are older. Love is not provoked. Are we slow to anger? It doesn't take into account the wrong suffered. Do we love each other even though at times we may feel that we've been wronged? How do we react to that? Love does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth. So where do we find our joy? It bears all things. Are we willing to bear things for others? It believes all things and it hopes all things. And endures all things. And we have to ask ourselves what we are willing to endure. Colossians, the 3rd chapter, I think sums up a lot of what I'm saying here tonight. Colossians chapter 3. As I read through this, try to find the pieces that talk about the unity. It If then you were raised with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ is sitting at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on things on the earth. For you died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, appears, then you also will appear with Him in glory. Therefore, put to death your members which are on the earth: fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. Because of these things, the wrath of God is coming upon the sons of disobedience, in which you yourselves once walked when you lived in them. But now you yourselves are to put off all these things: anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy language out of your mouth. Do not lie to one another, since you have put off the old man with his deeds, and have put on the new man, who is renewed in knowledge, according to the image of God who created him, where there is neither Greek nor Jew, circumcised nor uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave, nor free, but Christ is all and in all. Therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, put on tender mercies, kindness, humility, meekness, long-suffering, bearing with one another, and forgiving one another, if anyone has a complaint against another, even as Christ forgave you, so you also must do. But above all these things, put on love, which is the bond of perfection, and let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to which you also were called in one body, and be thankful. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. And whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through Him. And we've done some of this tonight, singing and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. But we have to remember that we all have taken off the old man, and we have put on the new man. And with that comes some responsibility. That bond of unity can only happen through those things. Bearing one another and forgiving one another. We see the attributes in verse 12. Put on tender mercies, kindness, humility, meekness, long-suffering. These are all important to us in how we talk with each other, interact with each other, and become one. So will we bear with each other, and will we forgive one another, and will we be able to grow in peace and unity? There's a lot to think about in that. I think about the things that Jeff said this morning, and the malnutrition that can occur. That's something that we all have to strive, and we all have to do something to make sure that that doesn't happen. That's what the food is to fix any unity issues as well. So, that's all I had to say this evening. A lot of things, I think, to think on, to dwell on. Not long, hopefully simple, but the things that we can consider. So, if you are in need of the assistance of this congregation, you have sinned, and you need to come down front and make that of a public nature this evening. I'll ask that you can do that at this time. Also, if you are not a part of the body of Christ, then you are not a part of the body. You're not involved in this unity that we can have, this love that we have toward each other, because you're still outside of Christ. You also have the opportunity to do that. You come down front as we stand and as we sing.